Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wisdom Wide Open Radio. Join me, your host, Susie Bonham Craig, and my esteemed guest, Dr. Linda Backman, as we embark on another journey to open the portal of wisdom. I invite you to participate in the chat room and call in with your questions on 718-305-6584 and press 1 to enter the queue. And now, our journey begins. Welcome, soulmates and journeyers, to another episode of Wisdom Wide Open Radio. Today is Sunday, the last day of January 2010, and we're just actually coming off the crest of our supermoon, the largest full moon of the year, which brings some pretty big conclusions. I just wanted to share that I almost didn't make it this evening. My mother-in-law made her transition yesterday, and I just found it so intriguing that tonight's show in Bringing Your Soul to Light with Dr. Linda Backman is really on key for me. So I know there's messages here for me, as I'm sure there is for you as well. And, you know, it's funny how a lot of us in our spiritual practices are really attuned to look at the fact that the past is over, that we really shouldn't be concentrating there in our lives and getting caught up in all the muck and you know, old belief systems and things. But I've come to know that through my coming out of the confusion of that is that every single healing process that I have participated in has brought up the past, whether it's feelings that come to the surface, that need facing or looking at before they can actually be released. And I'm sure many of you out there, you know, have these similar processes. And I myself experienced a past regression therapy, but not quite the one that we're going to be talking to about Linda Backman with Linda this evening. And I just want to tell you a little bit about Linda. Linda is a licensed psychologist. She's practiced for more than 30 years, actually, as a regression therapist. And since 1993, Dr. Backman has guided innumerable individuals in regression hypnotherapy to access their past and between lives. And in this way, she assists people to move to more fully recognize who we are as a soul throughout many lifetimes and during the time that we're incarnate. Now, she holds a profound commitment for deepening and heightening individual and as well as more universal understanding and awareness of the path of soul development leading to greater wisdom and acceptance among all people in all cultures of the world. Now, for many of our listeners, you know about the Spirit Space movie in which Linda was also featured. So we're really happy to have her on board with us this evening. And she also, along with her husband, opened up the Raven Heart Center, which we'll be getting into that a little bit further on as we go as well. So I'd like to bring you, without further ado, let me just make sure I can get this on the switchboard. Linda, are you there?
I am absolutely here. Hi, Susie. It's good to be here.
Oh, well, welcome. Like I said, this is something personal to me. I mean, we set this up quite a while ago, but, you know, since what's just transpired, there's something key here. So I'm hoping that our listeners find something here as well with journeying with you this evening. So can we talk a little bit about you and how you actually got involved with this regression therapy?
That is fine. I'm happy to talk about that. And I just get this strong sense that, you know, following that, totally your call, we should talk about when souls transition, because that's so timely and you're right in that space And that is really my passion, is that space between life and the higher realms. And so I'm happy to go there if that's where you want to go. That's easy for me, if that's a fair word to say, easy. So
no, that's great. You know, as far as where the soul goes when it transitions, I do have one question, though, that I'd like perhaps that you could clear up through your experiences with your clients.
Okay.
And that is, you talk about in your book, bringing your soul to light, healing through past lives and the time in between. You talk about how the soul during transition reunites with our higher self. And I just want to bring some clarity to that, because I know people are walking around saying, I am my soul. That's who I am in this incarnation right now. This is who I am. That is my higher self. So can you just explain the difference, what differentiates
Absolutely.
The soul and then our higher self?
Yes, I'll explain the difference, and I'll just preface what I'll say by saying that this information comes from thousands of unprompted regressions. So this isn't something that Linda dreamed up, and so it really is based in clients who've been guided in regression, and this is spontaneously what they've explained time and time again. So just to make it simple, Susie, the bottom line is that I'll use myself as an example. So let's just say I am not in body, I am not incarnate right now, and we'll just say that then my soul energy resides in the spiritual realm. It's sort of at home base, if you will. And so I decide, working with my guides and teachers, to plan a lifetime. And together we put some details into place about type of body and parents and where I'm going to be born and that kind of thing. We also decide that if you think, I often draw this, that's why I'm stopping for a minute. So if you think about if I was holding a ball of energy in my hand, and that ball of energy theoretically was 100% of my soul energy, and let's just say that, you know, in spirit we can do that. There's this ball of energy, and from an energetic standpoint, we, as a soul, that is all we are. We decide to bring an aspect, or maybe a more clear explanation is, we decide as a soul to bring a percentage of our soul energy into body, meaning we basically take a holographic portion of that 100% of soul energy, and we bring that holographic portion of energy into our body when we're born. That's what causes us to be alive. When we refer to the term higher self, or sometimes people use the term superconscious, that means, again, just simply to use myself as an example, my higher self is the soul energy that I did not bring into my body. That's the remainder. Let's just say theoretically I brought 30% of my soul energy into body. The remaining 70% stays in the spiritual realm. That's my higher self.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for clearing that up for me. I appreciate that. Yes, yes. So, you know, this has been, I would say, and now, you know, we're moving more away from this now, is just how controversial this subject has been through modern religion, through science. And now, you know, science is really coming together and finding its basis in spirituality, let's just say. So, you know, and calling this the time of awakening, and there's a reason for all this happening. I'm going to wait on the next question, because let's talk about the progression, because I've heard some contradicting elements about when the soul leaves the body. You know, sometimes it's 3 to 4 days, and that's why we have wakes, and, you know, where we prepare the body or for the soul's, you know, being lifted from the body. And then other times it leaves, you know, instantly. So could you explain exactly the process that you've discovered?
Well, my understanding about that is that as someone moves toward dying, now obviously there are different means by which we die. So let's just use the example of a long-standing illness, some kind of debilitative, gradual illness, and then maybe we also can jump to a sudden death. But so initially, let's just think about someone who's either elderly and is just simply dying of natural causes, or someone who has some, you know, long-term debilitative illness. What I believe happens, and I've seen this and been around this a fair amount because I've done hospice work and that sort of thing, is that I really think the soul begins to loosen prior to literal, you know, final breath, literal, you know, the body's no longer functioning, there's no more pulse, there's no more breathing. Prior to that actual moment of final breath, I really believe that oftentimes the soul loosens and slowly begins to disengage from the body, but doesn't necessarily fully disconnect until the final breath. My sense, and this comes from lots and lots of regression cases, the soul of the person who's died can hover close to the body for a fair length of time. It could be hours, it could be days, it could be weeks. It might even be longer than that. But based on regressions, what seems to be true is that the soul, when the person's no longer breathing, their soul has disconnected from the body. There's been some research done where, and I'm not sure how they did this in a gingerly appropriate way, but where the body was weighed very close to the time just before dying, and then that person's body, if you will, was weighed pretty quickly after the final breath. And the research shows there's a sort of a minuscule weight difference that shifts at the time of death, which would make us think that perhaps there's, you know, the soul has this minor amount of weight that it contributes to the body.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, because I've heard that too, where, you know, science will come in and say, well, those are the bodily fluids leaving the body, you know. And the reason why it intrigues me is because this is really not a great way to say this, but I've been doing death my whole life.
Right.
I mean, I started going to funerals when I was 2.5 years old. And I always seem to be with people that I connect, they're going through some kind of experience of loss, including myself, having lost my mom and grandmothers and uncles and whatnot throughout life. But, you know, my mother wasn't the type of person who says, don't bring the children to the funeral. But I used to have this uncanny urge to start laughing. Like, I would go up to the casket and I'd start laughing. And my mom used to scold me for that. And what I realized was that I wasn't laughing at them. I was laughing with them. And this is something that I tuned into, I guess, in my early 20s, that this just came to light for me. So when it makes the transition, when the soul actually leaves the body, and I know that there's some people that think that perhaps the soul has to leave the body before it's buried underground.
Right, right.
Is that true?
Oh, I guess my sense would be, I mean, of course you have 10 people, you have 10 different perspectives. My sense is that when the body is no longer functioning, the soul has left the body, sort of, if you will, left the confines of the body, if it's fair to put it that way, but may be hovering very close near the body, above the body. So I would say that when a body is being buried, if that's the final means of, you know, of dealing with what I would call our car or our vehicle that we use, you know, per lifetime, I don't believe the soul is in the body when it's being buried. That there, but I've seen some very interesting examples of what I would call signs that the soul is hanging out during a funeral, during a burial, that signs that souls are present, that the soul of the person that has died is present even during the funeral. I'll give you a quick example. I had an aunt that I was very close to who died, six, 8 years ago, and we just had a burial service. She was quite elderly, and I was standing next to her grandchildren. This happened to be a Jewish burial, and the rabbi was reading, from the prayer book, and the grandchildren, my aunt's grandchildren, were standing immediately next to me, and she just loved these grandchildren. And just as I became aware that there was this bee, it was a fairly warm day, there was a bee, as I became aware, there was a bee buzzing around the heads of these actually would be my cousins, these grandchildren of my aunt. Just as that came into my mind, the rabbi spoke the word being. And
wow.
He, some people would say, oh, Linda, you're just making that up. I don't think I really think my aunt was a tease, and she, she liked to be paid attention to. And I think there are lots of signs, if we know what to look for, that a loved one is close, meaning their soul is close, following dying.
Okay. I'm intrigued to the point where sometimes I feel very, very close. And when we talk about this hypnotherapy regression that you're talking about, how do we know that we're not, obviously we come into this lifetime and, the general statement is, well, we don't have a memory of our past lives. We're not supposed to have a memory. Yet we have these inclinations of our soul's history living in these current moments. So if the regression therapy is to be a benefit, how is it to be a benefit? And, how does that work for people in this life?
So, Susie, when a client comes in for a past life regression, and this is always my line, it's my byline to the client, is I'll say to the client, I'm in charge of the process, but I'm not in charge of the content. I'll say to the client, I am not the guru. The gurus that work with each of us sort of have a team, if you will, of gurus. And because that team are our spiritual guides and teachers who are not in body, that's not to say we might not have some wonderful people in our life that also support us and give us guidance. But the gurus being our team of guides and teachers, they decide, well, even to back up a couple of steps, I really think the way someone ends up in my office or in someone else's, another regression therapist's office, is our guides and teachers are constantly plucking our strings. So, for instance, one example, the way I think it happens is that person who happens to find my website or discover an ad that I have, or, maybe they've had three people in the last 3 months say, I think you need to go think about going to so-and-so for a regression. I believe that's all spirit guided. So by the time the client walks in the door for the past life or the between lives regression, their guides know exactly what they want to show to the client. And if we're speaking simply of past life regression, the past life that the client learns about, that the client accesses during the regression, is the past life that has content that will assist the client in their life today. So it's always meant as a learning process, a healing process. It's always meant as a way to push us further along our journey of soul development. And it's always purposeful.
Well, it was in my case as well. It helped me really come to understand a lot. And mine was a little bit different. Mine was a regression reading. It was more like a movie that was being played for me, and the difference between what you do and that is that, like you said, we are the content harbors. We have the content within us that comes to light. And you do mention in your book that the process itself is, if you could just let me find it here, that it's an induction process that's highly specific with particular hypnotic commands, sequencing, and instruction. So when you guide people through this, could you give us some type of example of how you, what this may look like during someone's first session?
Sure. And are you saying, Susie, give an example of how I guide the client, how I get them to the point that they're going to be able to experience the past life?
Yes. Like, how does that content come alive for them so that
okay.
they can actually articulate it?
Okay. So, and it may or may not be obvious, I train people to do past life and between lives regression as well. Anybody can learn to do this. You don't have to be a licensed psychologist to become a regression therapist. So we use this word that some people think is ominous. We use hypnosis, and a lot of people misunderstand hypnosis. So I often will say we use guided relaxation, because it's really all hypnosis is. It's just a means of quieting our conscious mind, not fully, but quieting it enough so that we have access to our subconscious and what we would call our higher self. And that's all done through breathing, guided imagery. I don't swing a watch in front of somebody's eyes. I don't have them roll their eyes back in their head. I don't use those kinds of means of hypnosis. We're all capable of going into light trance. We go there. This is what people worry about a lot. It's like, well, how do I know I can go into trance? Each of us guides ourselves into trance whenever we relax. Let's just say you sit down with a cup of tea or a glass of wine or something, and you turn on music, or you get in bed with a book you're going to read. You're guiding yourself into a light, relaxed state. So that's exactly what happens in a regression. I guide the client through these means of breathing and guided imagery, and then I basically use metaphor. I use metaphor to take them into what I call, this is one of the ways I do it, a variety of different ways, but one way is I take them into a hallway that I term the Hall of Wisdom, where there are doors on both sides of the hallway, and I'll say there are many doors. This is just how we kind of relax our mind and let the information start flowing. And I'll say the story of each of your lives is behind each of the doors in your hallway. And the client really begins to use their own intuition. Initially, they, of course, are just operating on metaphor. But what happens is metaphor gradually shifts into using our own capability. We're all intuitive. And what truly is happening is we're accessing the memories of past lives that are held at our higher self level, and we're supported and guided by our spiritual guides and teachers. So the story.
Okay, well, yeah, that's what I want to get into next, if we can.
Sure.
Is about those guides. We have our angel guides, and you know, oftentimes when you hear the likes of Lisa Williams or John Edwards, and you know, the actual readings that they do, they communicate from the other side that person will be waiting for them. So when we talk about these soul guides, can you give us, you know, and I know there's multiple stories through your book. Your book is very fascinating with these actual, you know, client sessions that have gone through, and I'm really intrigued by them. And I really encourage everybody to pick up this book, because it's pretty incredible. And you can get that at www.bringingyoursoultolight.com. Sorry, I just had to plug that in for you.
That's fine. Thank you so much.
but in these stories, is it by listening to so many people that you've been able to put together for yourself the continuity of the process, or is, because there must be a lot of commonalities there, even though everyone's content is different?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I would say certainly there is commonality. If people pick up my book, they can see that there are sort of general theme areas, so to speak, that past lives might fit within. But on the other hand, I'd even say more strongly that everyone's past lives are so very different. You know, it's funny, I often comment to people, I spent probably the first 15 to 17 years of my career as a psychologist doing general psychotherapy until I learned about regression work and moved into this work. this is so fascinating, the work that I do, because the stories are always new. And, you know, it's not to say that some people aren't working on, like, examples of themes might be, we have, I probably shouldn't say this in this economy right now, but, you know, so a client comes in and they're really not majorly struggling with finances, but they've always feared they would just be threadbare and, you know, poverty-stricken and not even a roof over their head. Makes no sense to them why they worry about that. They discover they had a life where they were ostracized, they had no money, they had nowhere to live. So this is sometimes the way our past life material leaks into our current life, if you will. I call that past life bleed through. But because and we all, quite honestly, we all have some level of past life bleed through. We may not recognize it as such. So there are common themes, and yet what's more typical is that the client's story is unique. It's unique to them. It has something to do with life today. There's a teaching that the guides of that client are doing vis-a-vis the actual past life that the client accesses and looks at. And I always say to people, too, this is linear work where the client learns about something that happened or who they were or where they were or whatever in the past life. It's also energetic work. It also releases stuck energetic places, if you will, in our soul energy that allow us to move further forward along our soul's developmental journey.
Mm. Okay, you know, we actually have a question that popped up in the chat room from Loving Light, and it was also one of my questions, but she asked it in a really good way. And there, what I wanted to bring up right before that'll lead into this question is with regard to the resonations that we have in this lifetime, you know, the synchronicities and the resonating feelings and familiar people and places and situations, you know, how can we trust that our visions and that the images are from past lives and just not some self-created or some recurring dream that we've had? If, in fact, maybe that is the memory of the soul coming through our dreams. But how can we trust?
Well, I think there are lots of ways to try to determine that. Let me see if I can list a few. So one would be, the level of power of the dream or the memory. If it's strong and days go by, weeks go by, months go by, the person can still remember the specifics of the dream or the memory. That's often a really good sign that it's valid versus something that was just made up in our head. That's one.
Okay. And that was something that Edie, I think, did in the movie, in the Spirit Space movie, where she was actually able to give it a full accounting of her regression.
Right.
Okay.
You know, that's the typical question when a client finishes a past life regression and they, you know, they open their eyes and they look at me, and probably 70% of the time the client will look at me. I call this the deer in the headlights stage, and they'll say, where did I get all that? You know, I wish I had a way of, like, playing a little clip, you know, right now for your show so that people could hear sometimes how much detail and at times how much emotion comes through in a past life regression. And I don't necessarily mean difficult emotion or horrible emotion, but the detail is pretty amazing. So the client often will then open their eyes and say, where did I get all that? And I tease the client at times, and I'll say, unless you're a famous novelist, I don't think you made all that up, because there's too much detail. You told me there was a hole in the left knee of your trousers, and, you know, one of your sandals was unbuckled. You know, you had a traumatic experience where your lover died in your arms when you were 21 years old. Why would you make something like that up? If you were going to make up a story, you'd make up something very simple and probably not the least bit difficult.
So, well, Right. Yeah. Now I understand what you're saying, because I did have a recurring dream for, you know, 20-some-odd years. And then I actually got into regression, and what came up out of that was incredible, because then I was able to go further in and see all of the details. I mean, it was just like watching a movie for me.
Exactly.
And myself in a movie, and I really wasn't even myself. So it was kind of strange, you know, and I had different color hair. At one point, I was even a little boy.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, talk about blowing your mind.
And that's always the funny part. I always notice, or often notice, that if I have a 50-year-old woman as a client, and let's just say when the past life begins, they are an 18-year-old male, I can tell at times that, you know, they speak the details so that they're saying this is a male body and, you know, blah, 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 this is what I'm wearing. But at times it's like they're going in, you know, inside of themselves, they're saying, oh, my goodness, you know. But that's very validating.
So after a regression therapy and people are able to reunite and be able to articulate exactly what that, you know, what they went through in that process, because we have someone in the chat room that says that they know at least two of their past lives, they see it, but, you know, am I sure about this? So coming out of regression therapy, what happens to a client that, when you say validating, I mean, what actually happens to them? Does it change their thought processes? How, you know, how do you know that you're sure?
Well, there are many ways to know that you're sure. One might be, how much does the past life explain something in current life? How
okay.
well does it explain it? Again, it might be, you know, here's a simple example. So a client comes in, male or female, and they say, you know, I'm 57 years old. I have never been able to have a long-standing, comfortable, romantic relationship, and I think there's something flawed about me. So what happens is, that this is not always the case, but at times this kind of a client will be taken to a past life in a historic period of time where they can describe dress and details
mm-hmm.
that really fit that period of time, and they have this very comfortable long-term marriage with three children. So, you know, I think it's really important for listeners to not think that all past lives are going to show us trauma that we had in the past that will explain something in our current life. Sometimes it's almost the reverse, where our guides are trying to normalize our view of our own life, where we're saying, you know, what's the matter with me, for instance? Why can't I have a satisfactory romantic involvement? And that then spirit will show a very comfortable, easy picture of a life where we had plenty of money, or a life where we had a very nice, comfortable, long-standing relationship.
Right. So now, you know, we talk about life lessons in this lifetime. So if we were to have had those experiences, like wonderful, like one of mine was, I was happily married, very, very poor in Russia, and I had 10 children, and I fed the neighborhood. You know what I mean? So even though I was very, very poor, I was very, very abundant. And so, like, what would that bring to my present life? Is there something that's to be gained? Or is it just to say, hey, well, I did have a fabulous life of abundance at one time, you know, when you talk about a lot of money or whatever. You know, what is it coming up for in this life? And is it always connected to someone that we're connected to in this lifetime?
Okay, so two questions. Let me see.
Great question. Yeah.
Separate them.
I'm good at that.
Yeah. Well, one, Susie, would be that I believe virtually 100% of the time, the past life that comes forward during the regression is coming forward to send a message to the client, or send messages, it might be more than one, that is purposeful. So, for instance, you know, your lifetime of abundance, where you had abundance because you had these children that you cared for and they felt close to you. I mean, obviously, in our current times, what a beautiful life to teach us to stop worrying so much about literal monetary abundance, which I think our culture worries far too much about. I often say
right.
to clients, have you ever not been taken care of? Have you know, think about it. Have you ever not been able to pay your rent, not had anything to eat? And, you know, most of us, if we're honest, will say, you know, maybe I didn't have extra money to go buy that new pair of shoes that I'd seen that I thought was really cool. But I've had a roof over my head. I've had, you know, I've had the basic necessities. So there's always a message, and it's always meant to be positive, not heinous or hurtful. And it's hard to talk in the abstract, because this is easier to do when the client comes in and they access a past life, and then we process. So what is this meant to teach you? And the thing I always say to people who are taking regression training is, it is not your job as the regression therapist to tell the client what they are to be learning. It's your job to help them process it so they uncover for themselves what the message is.
Okay, so if someone has a feeling that they've had a recurring dream and they keep seeing these visions over and over again, and maybe it's even connected with someone that they're engaged with in their life now, you work to broaden that scope, or do you start from scratch and you don't pay attention to any of that information?
That's a great question. When the client comes in, and again, we're talking strictly about past life regression, and because obviously I do two types of regression, but when the client comes in for a past life regression, we'll begin talking, and I'll say to the client basically this. I'll say, do you have an intention for our session today? In other words, do you feel like you really would like to know more about that man that you were married to for 17 years and you've just gone through a divorce? And have you known him before? And what might the divorce be about? And, you know, so I'll say, do you have a goal for the session? Or I'll say, you don't have to have a goal, because spirit's going to develop the goal anyway. And I say to the client, it's perfectly fine to have a goal or goals, and it's fine to have an intention, which is basically what the goals are. But I'll say to the client, I want you to know that spirit's going to choose the life to show you that they think is most important for you to learn today during this session. So please trust that it might explain something about this man you just divorced, to use it as an example, or it might explain something you've never even considered thinking about, but when we're finished with the session, you will have some sense of for what reason that particular life came forward.
Okay.
And the plot thickens as you go,
Yeah, because I, you know, rather than go in there and open up what the intention is, I would think that what would give me the inclination to go for past life regression therapy is because I have this nudging, I have this urge, and that there's something I'm trying to understand, because it keeps coming up and I keep resonating very strongly with it. So when my intention is, you know, I want to know why this, what my relationship is with this person in this lifetime. Like, why is it that I have this feeling like I've known them before? You know, which is the most general, right?
And I'll say that more often than not, if the client comes in with a strong intention like you've just described, more often than not, they will access a life that ties to that particular person. But not always. And the bottom line is, because our guides at times, you know, they hold higher wisdom than we do. Our guides are generally souls, and this information comes more from between lives content, but our guides are almost always souls that are somewhat more progressed than we are, sometimes a great deal more progressed as a soul, sometimes only minorly more progressed. So we have to trust. Our guides and teachers never have anything negative. They don't intend to cause us harm. It's just the reverse. They hold our highest good as their intention.
Yeah, and isn't there something very calming about that, the whole conclusion, if you will, you know, when there is that validation, that it really makes the understanding easier and it really a lot less cloudy about what those lessons are. I mean, these are when these aha moments reach a peak, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just an example that pops in my head. I had a client, I don't know, a couple of years ago or so, a man come in and he said, I've had this very spiritually capable man. He said, I've had this pain in the center of my chest for 25 years and no doctor can find anything wrong, but it's there basically every day. And he said, I really think I was stabbed. That's how I died. But that's all I know. So, I gave him the usual spiel about, you know, we may access a life that's tied to that pain and we may not. So he went into a past life. And let's see if I can make this really, really brief. It was in, I think, the 1500s in France. He was the head of a castle, like the king or the, you know, the guy in charge, so to speak, of the castle. And suddenly, a motley crew of people came toward, like they were going to storm the castle. So my client, the head of the castle, you know, opened up and the drawbridge, you know, opened the door and came rushing out with his villagers that lived inside the castle, coming behind him because he was going to find out what did this motley crew of people want and for what reason were they storming his castle. And this motley crew of people said, you know, your village, your castle and those people that live there, they have more than we have. But in the midst of all this, someone from the back of this motley crew came around, and my client, as the head of the castle, didn't see this guy come around, and he came straight at the head of the castle and stabbed him in the middle of the chest, killed him, and then they stormed the castle, and many people died. The client was holding guilt about not protecting his people, his community. And just it is not to say that every regression is like this, but truly, and I've had continued contact with this man, the client, he's not had an ounce of chest pain since that regression. Now, that doesn't happen every single time, so I don't want to over-dramatize past life regression, but it's quite common. So his intention, what he wanted to learn, did happen, and in this case, he released the guilt and no longer has the pain in his chest.
Well, I experienced that myself, not with pain, but with the actual process of the understanding just brought a tremendous amount of humble acceptance about what was going on in my life now. You know, to be able to understand the origin of it. Even if I couldn't do anything about it now, there was an understanding of why it was, you know, why it was in my life now and give me, a deeper look into myself and healing, things that needed to come up for healing. Because I noticed a lot of patterns. Now, have you had that with clients that you see repeatedly, that they go through more than one of these doors and there's a general theme about this lifetime where patterns show up?
Yes, and because I think we all have patterns. Our soul basically in its journey of development has a pattern or patterns. In other words, each of our souls is often on a particular, I often call it a trajectory of learning, meaning we're on a trajectory of, let's just say, for instance, we're balancing gender issues. In other words, we're balancing the fact that men and women both are equal. Neither one is better or stronger than the other. So we're going through lifetimes of learning for ourselves and then teaching others to balance the gender. To balance the societal way that we judge people based on gender, or we have expectations of people based on gender. That's just an example. So we all have, if we look at our soul development, and this is information we can gain in a between lives regression, we can also, there are ways to gain a perspective about our soul, even without regression. And I'm actually working on my second book, and I'm looking at a lot of different ways to look at this. But the bottom line is our soul has various overriding areas of purpose. Maybe that's the best way to put it.
Okay. Well, we had a question in the chat room, and I think you just pretty much answered this. You know, can you talk about how we show up as some noble or, you know, well-to-do, well-known person, and then show up as a janitor in this life, you know, type of thing where we, you know what I mean, where it's a complete opposite. And we mentioned that before, too, about, you know, abundance and being poor but being humble and being able to provide. And now we see a lot of these opposites going on. So could you explain that?
Well, opposites, that's a beautiful question. Opposites are for the purpose of balance, as the listeners might imagine. It's like, okay, so maybe I don't know for sure, maybe I had a life as an aristocrat, you know, where I had lots of position in life and plenty of money and that kind of thing. Well, I certainly have not had all my lives like that. In fact, Spirit will decide to be sure I have a balance of lives where, you know, I may be nearly poverty stricken or I feel very unrecognized or something like that. So we also, as we progress along our journey as a soul, we have to move from what I would call from being focused on ego or self, you know, who am I, me,
right,
to the place of being humble and recognizing it's not about me, it's about us.
Mm. That's so true. I find that myself. Now, but this is when we talk about how each life is scripted. We're scripted through this balance.
Right.
Per se. Is that what you mean by that?
Yes, I think we're saying the same thing, that before we come into body each time, we basically, this sounds very human, and but it's an easy way to describe it. Before we come into body each time, as a soul, we have a meeting or meetings with our guides and elder teachers, and we develop the script, so to speak, or the plan for the upcoming incarnation. It's always purposeful. And so, and we're always working to balance, because ultimately the goal is to move into a place of balance, whether it's gender, whether it's rich, poor, whether it's having successful romantic relationships and unsuccessful romantic relationships, you know, in so many elements that we need to balance. But our goal as a soul is to progress to the point through our lifetimes where we gain sufficient balance and sufficient, to use a beautiful word that you use in your radio show, wisdom, to the point where we then work as teachers working from the spiritual realm, and we may either infrequently incarnate at that point of what you might call ascension, or we may not incarnate anymore because we become spirit guides and teachers.
Mm.
But that only happens when we reach a relative place of balance.
Well, then, would that explain why some people are really severely, I mean, in the scope of our understanding, are severely challenged? I mean, it sounds like there's, you know, to have something so severe in this lifetime or traumatic to experience, does that mean the balance is really out of whack? That we need, like, you know, the bricks to fall on our head type of thing?
Actually, the answer to that is probably no. What I find when a client comes in for a between lives regression, and I'll just, you know, briefly, the listeners may know what that is, but just explain that briefly. So that's a longer regression than a past life regression. It's basically an extension and an evolution of past life regression, where the client moves through a past life, moves all the way to the ending of the past life, and then the between lives part of the regression is when the client is pure spirit. During the regression, it's almost, the best way to explain it is that the client is accessing themselves at the higher self level, and the client can learn a lot about who they are as a soul, not just who they are in one past life. So usually what happens, if a client comes in and the client says to me, just to create an example, the client says, when I was 12, my mother died. I'm 42 years old. When I was 36, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and they thought I wouldn't live, and now I'm free of the cancer. I've had a child die, and now I'm happily married, and I have another child. One thing I almost always begin to assume or surmise, but I never say this to the client before we start the regression, that's usually a sign of a pretty developed soul. That's usually a soul who has come into body to clean up more of the final pieces of soul development because they can manage so much trauma. And they may be cleaning up some of their later, if you will, their moving toward completion elements of soul development. Or, Susie, they might be experiencing these quote-unquote human traumas to teach someone else and not really be doing much more learning for themselves as a soul. They've come to be of service, to teach others more than to learn for themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's, I don't know, like I've been told I'm an end timer. Now, when we talk about, and this was through a clinical psychology type of therapy that I had gone through, and which I facilitate now, is that this particular lifetime, there's lessons in this particular lifetime that we're in, as there is in everyone. But an end timer, are those the type of people that can choose to come back or not and stay as those teachers or facilitators, you know, these group of souls that are present at that meeting? Is that what that translates into?
If I understand, so if I answer and I'm not really answering your question, please say so.
No, that's okay.
What I think you're, so yes, we can reach the point as a soul that we have sufficiently developed, meaning we're in sufficient balance, we have sufficient wisdom, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's always different words you can put to that, where we either are close to completing our cycle of incarnation or potentially, and this is not very common, but it does happen, or potentially we have completed what you might call our cycle of required incarnation, and now we're coming into body completely out of choice and perhaps to teach others much more than learning for ourselves.
Okay, and with that, is well, it actually answers something else for me. Is that why when you incarnate and your desire, you have a very, very strong calling and a passion to be helping others, could that be part of that?
Absolutely, could be. Yes.
Okay.
And I think, you know, for people like you, like me, and probably like nearly all, if not 100% of your listeners, and probably 100% of your guests, I'll bet, most of us are more experienced souls than less experienced souls. There's no judgment about that because you have to go to first grade, and that's how you get to second grade, and that, you know, so there's, it's not a better worse thing. It's not a hierarchy. But we're not the norm. You know, so here's my belief system out there in black and white. We're not the norm on this planet. We came here probably to be, I love the terms, to be of service. But we came here to help. You know, this is a complicated time on our planet Earth. We're looking at, you know, all the struggle with health care and all the struggle with banks and mortgage industry and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we're here, I would say, to hold as high a level of consciousness as we can to move more toward unity versus diversity.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
But many, you know, when you say we're not the norm, but there's been such a tremendous expansion of awareness, and I think we've only gotten in tune with that because of the technology that we have and that we're able to actually, you know, converse with these people and be in these groups of like-mindedness and you know, where the vibrational energy levels are high enough that it's an open channel for a lot of people. Don't you suspect that?
Totally agree with that. It's like it's much easier to access our higher self than it used to be. There are more and more aware people on this planet, and you know, if you look at some of the young children of today, oh my gosh! I mean, talk about capable, developed souls coming in as some of these children of today. That's all meant to be. So yes, I totally agree with what you just said.
Okay. And we had a question in the chat room. Thank you for that. We had a question in the chat room saying, is this a reason why to some of us the metaphysical view is more of course and natural, whereas to others they struggle to release the security of the physical?
Yes, I think if I understand that question, the listener's saying, is one of us who is a, you know, somewhat more developed soul versus less developed soul, whatever that really means, are we people that are what we might call spiritual seekers or metaphysically oriented more than someone who says, I don't believe in that, or it doesn't interest me, I don't understand? I think the answer is certainly yes. And, you know, some of us are slow to move in this direction. I always chuckle. I have a very dear friend who's a very capable, intuitive healer who said to me one day, he said, Linda, you know, you're a late bloomer. And what he means, what he meant by that, you know, I thought, well, no, wait a minute, what is he talking about? And I think this is true for a lot of us. I have no trouble with my age, so this will help the story make more sense. I'm in my early 60s. I didn't move into being spiritually aware and into this work until I was in my middle 40s. I apparently wasn't ready. So I was a very grounded psychologist before that. I did a lot of death, dying, and grief work as a psychologist. So clearly I was moving in that direction. But I was I think 46 before I opened to this kind of work and this kind of awareness. I bet your listeners are a whole mixture. Some are those people that sometimes walk into my office and they'll say, you know, when I was 10, I was talking to my guides. And then some of those people out there listening are probably more like I just described myself. They're, you know, they're much later to wrap their arms around these concepts. But, yes, this is much more timely because it's needed now, I believe, to be metaphysically oriented.
Well, we talk about the soul's history and how it's relevant even in this moment, right? Because this is how regression connects, or the therapy, the type of therapy that you do, brings to light. And for me, I know it was a lot of synchronicities that I was always intrigued by synchronicity. I never believed in coincidence. And in fact, I used to debate it all the time. No, that's got to mean something. It's got to mean something, because it was very strong for me. And it wasn't until my, you know, early 20s that I started to put things, like I look back and I go, oh, wait, that is connected. Oh, wait, that is connected. And then they started to be these series of revelations that I was having, rather than, you know, is there anything that before your 46th year that you resonated with, and or now that you look back, came together for you?
Oh, absolutely. That's a fun way to do it. In fact, I teach workshops for people just wanting to enhance their spiritual awareness and understand their soul's journey. And one of the things I like to do is ask that very question to the people in the group. It's like, so what were those early signs in your life that now you comprehend, you know, were leading you in a spiritual direction, but you didn't realize that? I mean, couple of them for me, probably the earliest that I'm aware of anything that looked like I might be interested in metaphysics. When I was quite young, maybe about 8 years old, as is typical for children of that age, I started, you know, really learning about death and what was death, and certainly learned it from a very grounded, traditional perspective. But I can remember saying to myself in my own privacy, I would try to do this inner talk thing, and I would say in a silent way, I'd say, Linda, at some point you won't be. At some point you will just go away because you'll die. And I can clearly remember that something inside of me time and time again said, like screamed no, and said, no, that makes no sense to me.
Right.
And I didn't know what that meant. at all. I just knew it just didn't make any sense. So that certainly was there. And then another piece of just briefly my own personal life history that slowly but surely led me to where I am today. When I was 25 years old, and I'll say I'm happily married to the same man for almost 43 years, so I married quite young, and he's still my husband, and we still like each other. So I was pregnant with our second baby, and I delivered that second child. This is a long time ago, about 37, 38 years ago. I delivered that baby prematurely at 26 weeks of an average 40-week pregnancy. And that baby lived a very short time, a few hours, and died or transitioned. That was a huge traumatic, you know, back then, a huge traumatic experience in my life. But it opened my eyes to death and dying. It opened my eyes to grieving. I later went on to do a lot of grief counseling with people. I actually co-established an agency in the southeastern United States for families who'd had a child die. It changed my life. And I know that that was purposeful. It wasn't so Linda could go through some horrible trauma.
You know, and that intrigues me, that story that, you know, that you talk about how you really, what dawned on you about how more psychotherapists should be getting involved with and working with, you know, with grief and, you know, people who are grieving. And, you know, I gave birth to a child at 26 weeks. I'm sorry, not 26 weeks, 32 weeks. I went into labor at 26 weeks, and she did survive, but it was push and pull for a long time. But you know what? There was always something inside of me that I was never worried. I was never, you know, like people saying, your child is sick. And it was like, was it the fact that I didn't believe them that she came through this? You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't feel that connection of grief and worry and all of that. I just felt like everything was going to be fine. But, and, you know, people would call that denial.
Oh, I wouldn't call that denial at all. I would say, Susie, I mean, given who you are today and what you do, I think on an intuitive level, you knew that that baby would survive. And you knew that this was a purposeful experience and not something that was going to be horrible for you or horrible for your child. That's my sense, is that was intuitive knowing on your part.
It was. Okay, so it wasn't, and I was told you're in denial, you know, this baby could die tomorrow, and I'd be like, yeah, but I'm not feeling that. I'm not feeling that at all. In fact, I knew that she was going to be born before she came. I knew, I mean, I woke up one morning and said, you know, this baby's not going to make it past May 25th, and her due date was July 7th, and she was born on May 7th. So it was, you know, it was, where does that come from?
What I would say is there's a reason that you walked through that experience, and there's a reason that your child went through that experience, and that on some level, you know, I'd have to spend more time with you to help you figure that out, but there's a reason that all happened, and that you had precognition, you had premonition, because you are very intuitive, and you could access that information that this baby wasn't going to stay in utero until the technical due date. But you also knew it was going to be okay. Does that make
sense? Thank you. Thank you for that. Yes, we did get off track. Another interesting question in the chat room. Do souls have temperaments?
That's a good question. They're all good questions, but I love when people come up with questions because there are things that we need to talk about. Souls, so let me see if I can explain this simply. When we incarnate, and when we're preparing, when we're creating a plan for our next incarnation, together with the support and guidance, again, of our guides and teachers, what I like to call our spiritual team, as a soul or at the soul level, we decide what kind of body we're going to have, and we also decide what kind of personality we're going to have that's tied to our literal brain, that's tied to the gray matter that sits inside of our skull, that does have a type of personality. And we meld that, so it's almost like three ingredients, type of body, type of, if you will, mind or gray matter, so to speak, and we meld that with the temperament, or sometimes I call it our soul nature. And our soul nature or soul personality, if you want to call it that, or temperament, might be different than our human personality that's tied to the literal gray matter that sits inside of our head. If our soul temperament is different than our gray matter, if you will, for lack of a better way of saying that, there's some learning process going on. In other words, if we have a very sensitive personality that comes from our human mind, mm-hmm. but we're an easygoing soul, or maybe we're a capable, experienced soul, there's a learning process going on for us by having to deal with both sort of kind of mushed together, if you will.
Okay. Wow. All right, so your personality, your temperament you're born with, your personality is what you develop as a result of your environment? Am I not getting that right?
And now you're talking about your human personality.
Right, well, okay.
So I think what you're asking is there, this is kind of where there's some benefit to be a psychologist with traditional training and a regression therapist who's a, you know, a very spiritually, metaphysically oriented person. What we know from formal conventional psychology is that the brain that we have in our head, there's a part of our brain where our emotional nature is kept or our personality is kept. It's called the limbic system of our brain.
Mm-hmm.
That each of us has a certain kind of personality that's tied to that literal human brain we have. And that does develop and is impacted by our environment and our life day by day. If our mother dies when we're 12, our human personality is going to be impacted in some way.
Right.
If our soul development is quite experienced, we're likely to do relatively okay, even if, let's just use something really, really complicated. So let's just say, this is not true for me, but let's just say when I was 12, I was in the car with my mother. She was driving, and there was a car accident, and she died, and I survived. That's going to affect me from a human standpoint, from a personality standpoint, probably in some way. If my soul is quite experienced, that might, and I really want to underline might say that I'll cope with that fairly well and move forward relatively smoothly through my lifetime.
Okay.
It's hard to explain.
I would think that it was. I have another one that's kind of hard to explain, too. I'm actually getting flooded here with questions in the chat room, so I apologize. I'm trying to manage this together. We have actually a very loyal listener who actually doesn't really listen. She chats in the chat room because she's deaf. And she has a question about how can someone go through a soul regression therapy if they're deaf?
Oh, wow. Good. That's a great question. I mean, I've certainly worked with people, so I assume that she's sufficiently hearing impaired that even if I theoretically was the regression therapist and I sat very close to her, she probably couldn't hear me speaking at all, I would assume.
No, she would read lips and, you know, that type of thing, and she could use the TDD over the phone type of thing, you know what I mean? But whatever that's called.
So we'd have to find a creative way, either we would have to find a creative way of someone coming in to sign, to interpret for me. That would be possible. We also, you know, so she'd have to have her eyes open. That's not to say it wouldn't work. I think we could do it in a very creative way. I've worked with people who are hearing impaired, but I've not worked with someone, I'm trying to think back, I think this is true, that is so sufficiently hearing impaired, if you will, that they can't hear at all. But there would be, I'm not a person, never say never. I think that there would be a way to creatively do regression work with her and for her, and it would just be different. I might have to, someone might be having to use a braille machine to be typing, or she might have to be looking at something visual that types out what I'm speaking.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a way.
Yeah, through the interpreter. Like, I speak with her over the telephone, but it's through a service that translates what she says, and I have this conversation with a third party, which is actually her coming through.
Yes.
Which is pretty neat. So, are they face-to-face only therapy sessions that you conduct?
I do past life regression by phone, but I don't do between lives regression by phone. It's too deep and too profound, and I really want to be with the client. I'll also add that if people go to my website, I travel quite a bit to do the work that I do. So I happen to live in Colorado, but I travel a great deal and work in various cities around the country and at times out of the country. So that's just important for people to know there are options. And there are also ways that I'm happy to help people look for someone in their area. So all of those are options.
Okay, good. Really good. I think I had another question here, and it just completely flipped by me here. I actually can't find it. I think that portion went away, so I'm sorry. And people, listeners, please, if you have a question for Linda, please call in on 718-305-6584. We'd be very happy to take your questions. If you have called in and you have a question, press 1 on your keypad so that it'll raise your hand on the switchboard so they know that you'd like to ask Linda a question. So let's just recap a little bit on how people can get in touch with you, Linda, you do have the Raven Heart Center, too, which is where you and Earl come together. This is where you actually train people. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So I'll just give 3 ways people can find me. They can go to the website of the Raven Heart Center, and that's just www.raven, like the bird, R-A-V-E-N, heart, like our physical heart, H-E-A-R-T, center, ravenheartcenter.com. Phone number would be 303-818-0575. That's the easiest way. I also have a website, bringingyoursoultolight.com, which is the title of the book.
Right. Okay, I got them in the chat room. Great. Awesome. And I do encourage everyone to get the book. It's really fascinating reading. And, Linda, you have another book that's coming out that's going to really explain the process more. Is that what the purpose of that book is?
Actually, the purpose of the second book is going to help people to look at what is the overriding reason or purposes that I'm in body this life. How do I determine for what reason did I incarnate? What am I working on? Why did I come into body? And I'm going to talk about a variety of ways to figure that out, both through regression and through looking at various experiences you've had in your life. There'll be some exercises in that book. The most common question, Susie, that people come into a between lives regression with is, what's my life purpose?
Right.
Why am I here? What am I doing here? We all are here for a purpose. So that's what I'm looking at in the second book, with examples of cases, clients, just like the first book.
Yeah, this one sounds really exciting because it's really about us. And in the first book, we get to hear a lot of other people's experiences that you bring to light. So it would be really cool to really get down and do the internal work ourselves and bring that to light. That's really cool. I'm looking forward to that book. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I do have more questions. always, which is why I love doing these shows, because I get to ask a lot of questions. Here's the big thing. Can we really communicate with the loved ones after they die?
Absolutely, yes. Beyond the shadow of a doubt. And I say that because that really is what led me into this work. And I won't go into the story in all the details, but when I was in my middle 40s, like I mentioned, my business colleague and original psychologist colleague, a friend and colleague, died in his early 30s from a type of lung cancer. And I, almost instantly following his literal physical transition or dying, started sensing that he was communicating with me. And I thought, this is strange. Is this real? This was completely new for me. I thought, am I going crazy? And fortunately, being a psychologist, I knew what crazy looked like, and I pretty much thought that, I wasn't crazy. I also started having spontaneous memories of past lives with him. So that's what led me, really. That was my opening. Some people have a near-death experience that opens them to this. There's all kinds of ways that we become consciously spiritual, consciously metaphysical, but that was my experience. So I have no doubt that we can communicate with our loved ones. Basically, it's a two-way street, so that our loved one has to be ready, that the energy, the soul of our loved one has to be ready to communicate, and we need to be open and believe that it's possible. We also need to trust that we're intuitive, because we're all intuitive. But yes, absolutely. I really do believe that when loved ones cross over, they often try to be in communication with us, and we're the ones that aren't open to recognizing it. So it's not so much that our loved one isn't communicating from spirit, it's we're the ones that don't know how to listen or recognize or think it's spooky and scary. So, yes, it's very, very common.
Yeah, well, I think the people that do, they know. That's the way I feel, because I know that I know. I mean, it's talk about validation. I mean, I even think that people that aren't sure are more in denial about communications that they've had, and they just don't trust it.
I think that's totally true. And I love when you say, you know that you know. And that's what I would say, is people need to think in capital K, capital N, capital O,
yes,
capital W. When you know, you know.
Yeah, it is a knowing. It's a knowing, and there's no question, of where that comes from. There's no doubt. There's nothing to question. It happens, and you feel it, and it's a resonating like no other, I think.
Exactly. There's been a fair amount of research of widows and widowers, and the percentage is something like 50 to 60% of all widows and widowers, if they're questioned about it, will say, absolutely, yes, I have experienced communication from my spouse in spirit.
Mm.
And, people, I think it's important, I'll just say this briefly too, it's important for people to know some of the things to look for. The way that loved ones communicate with us can come in a variety of forms. So sometimes we just sense information. Sometimes it's no different than, your phone rings and you say to yourself, I know who that is on the other end of the phone. I'm not talking about a loved one now right this minute, but we've probably all had the experience where our phone rings, we answer it, but before we answered it, we said, I know who that is, and when we answer, we're correct. We have to trust that, what I call cognitive way of being intuitive. But also loved ones show up in animal form. Sometimes it's the repetition of a butterfly flying
mm-hmm.
in front of our face. It can be a bird. It can be a deer. It can be any kind of an animal.
I think you're just reading my whole story here, but go ahead. Okay, we actually have a caller on the line, and we only have about 10 minutes left, so I'd like to bring them on. Is that okay?
Oh, it's totally fine.
Okay, well, yeah. Wonderful. Hold on. Hi, area code 604. You're on the air. Do you have a question for Linda?
No, I don't have a question, Susie, but I'd like to say hello to the both of you. Hello, Dr. Backman. Hi, Susie. My name is Tanya Kay. And what I'm doing is I've been basically surfing, you know, blog talk radio shows because I plan to start my own. But I have to validate the both of you. Is it okay if I do that?
Absolutely.
Good. My background is in the field of life skills and the field of psychic phenomena for over 35 years. I ran my own centers in the United States. I live in Canada. I've been here about 11 years. And you are on the right track, Linda. You're absolutely on the right track. The fact is that essence does communicate. They communicate through concepts, through something as simple as the passing of a butterfly before your eyes. And, you know, and love just doesn't know death. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just absolutely phenomenal. The service that you're rendering is just really incredible. And I like the idea that a person can come into contact or communication, as it were, with identities that they've assumed before so that they can, you know, start to piece together the jigsaw puzzle of all of the various characteristics that they've created in past lives that, you know, they bring that experiential track forward, of course, and then they're trying to figure out who they are in present time. And enlightenment in that area helps them to certainly succeed in that particular journey. But this is a poem I wrote back in 1976 that's on my business cards, and it kind of expresses how I feel about all people everywhere, and particularly people like yourself who are rendering the service that you are in present time. You know, we have a planet that needs to really heal, and we have a lot of people on the planet that need to heal as well, so what you do is very valuable. So here's how I feel about you, okay? The name of the poem is Infinite Potential, and that was the name of my corporation, by the way, and it goes like this. My love for you is like the flight of a silver bird on the wings of time going through eternity towards an everlasting golden sunrise.
Mm, that's lovely, Tanya.
Thank you so much, Tanya, for sharing that.
I'd like to thank you for letting me share. I think I've done something like 10 shows in 2 days now, and it's amazing. Like, you know, I didn't connect to a lot of people. The first show I listened to, and this is really quite humorous, I'm looking at it with a sense of humor, though, was a dog show. And it was about a whole, you know, a park, a recreational park that was being built to the tune of $10 million for, you know, for dogs. And I thought that was great. And then all of a sudden I hit on several other categories, and I connected up to some really fantastic people. So you would be numbers 5 and 6 that I think are just pretty phenomenal, actually 6 and 7. Out of all those shows, I've met 7 people that are just spectacular. It seems to be a really enlightened breed of cat that's on Blog Talk Radio is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so. Well, we're happy to be a part of the whole like-minded and spirited community, and I really appreciate you saying so.
Yeah.
Right, Linda?
Absolutely.
Right.
Thank you.
On all of your information, I have basically Ravenheart Center. Is that C-E-N-T-E-R?
Correct.
.com, correct? And
correct.
Then 303-818-2575. And then, Susie, I have your information.
Tanya, I'm going to interrupt you. It's 0-0-5-7-5 at the end of that phone number.
0-0-5-7-5.
Right. It's 303-818-0-5-7-5.
Got it. I've totally got it. I'm sight impaired, so sometimes I can, you know, I can write something down erroneously. And then your name is Susie, correct? The host of the show?
Yes.
Wisdom Wide Open. And I've got that as Wisdom Wide Open, 718-305. Is that 658?
That's the call-in number. Our email is info@wisdomwideopen.com.
Okay, info. Let me put that down. Info at
wisdomwideopen.com.
I've got it. Yeah, I'd like to stay in communication. It's probably going to be a month before all of the logistics of the show that I'm putting together will, you know, will be done. But God, I just so enjoyed listening to both of you speak. You have no idea. What I like is the heartfelt feeling that I get from the both of you. Like, Linda, you're passionate about what you do, and when you speak emphatically and with certainty, a person really gets that. And it's just nice. That's all, and that's probably an understatement of how it really is, but I just really enjoyed the... I've only been on for about 10 minutes, and I thought, yes, I can listen to this show. There were a couple of them where I went, what? What is going on with these people? And I thought, oh, well, they're not awake yet.
Linda, I believe you have a fan
It sounds that way. Tanya, you've said such lovely things about both Susie and I. Thank you so much.
Yes, well, thank you. And we look forward to your show coming on. So please, you know, we'll try, send us a friend invitation and we'll certainly hook up with you.
I appreciate that. I have a learning curve on the advanced technology because I'm basically part of the on-off, up-down generation, and beyond that, you know, like I get befuddled, okay? So I'm in training with things like the dashboard.
Yeah, it'll come quickly. You just need to do it a couple of times, yeah.
If I can work with a formula, I'm fine. Listen, I don't want to take you off topic because what Linda has to say is valuable, and there could be other listeners on the line. I'm sure there are. And I'd want them to have the best of what she has to say with the time that she has. So I'm going to shut up now and just sit here quietly till the show is over. But thank you for letting me speak. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tanya. And best of success to you and your new show.
Thank you.
Okay, Linda, thank you so much. That was awesome.
That was
awesome.
Absolutely. That was very kind of her.
And we were talking about validation all night, so see?
There you go. Spirit said, we're going to get more validation. So that's.
I want to know where I met Tanya in a past life. All right. Well, I do. You know what? We have like 4 minutes, but I have the last question that I really can't be without.
Okay.
Was, is it possible, can we live two lives simultaneously?
Yes, it is totally possible. That question often comes up. Yes, we can live two lives simultaneously. What that means is there are two different, if we put it in linear explanation, there are two different holographic portions or holographic aspects of our soul energy in two bodies at one time. I find, Susie, that this is only possible if our soul is of more than average soul experience. It's sort of like you have to know how to do a lot of balancing. And so this does happen. I come across clients where this is, in fact, the information that comes through in their regression. It's not extremely common, but, yes, it occurs.
Wow. Now, is that something that Fred Allen Wolf was discussing in the movie about having dreams and being in other people's bodies? Is that the type of thing that we're talking about?
I'm not so sure that's what Fred was talking about. My sense is, you know, Fred is a funny, incredibly bright individual.
Yes.
And I think, I mean, I love Fred. He's hysterical and he's real, and I really believe he knows what he's talking about. I think Fred is very, very intuitive. And I think, you know, Fred may be talking about remembering past lives. I don't know for sure whether he's talking about that. We often call it a parallel life or a split life.
Right.
That'd be interesting. I need to have a conversation with him and see if I could figure out whether he's talking about two simultaneous lives or not.
Well, let's do that. We should have a show on that.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Everyone loves Fred. And obviously, you have fans tonight, so this is wonderful.
Right, that'd be fun to have Fred and I together. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I do, you know, I, as well as I, you know, all the questions that came through the chat room tonight, it was very, very busy. I think we need to do this again soon. I know your schedule's booked, but because it took a while to get you here. But would that be something that you consider doing again?
I would. You know, it's interesting. I totally agree with what Tanya's saying, Susie, and you know, I've done a number of radio shows. What Susie is saying about, or excuse me, what Tanya is saying about your skills as the host, I think, Susie, is totally true. I would love to be on with you again. And so the key is just getting it on my schedule and putting it into the plan.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we only have about 90 seconds left. So is there any last thought that you have that you'd like to share with our listeners? Because the show will continue to stream live as long as you and I are on the phone. Just those that are plugged into the internet won't hear it. They'll have to listen to the archive.
Well, I would simply say to people that they need to believe that their life is purposeful and that they are here for a reason. They're accomplishing something every single day, even when they feel like they're not. And to function or view themselves always, always as a soul in body. In other words, it's the classic thing, as a soul having a human experience, not a human having a soul experience, to know that their life serves a purpose, both for them and for those around them. And obviously, I would encourage people to pick up my book and read it. Even if they never have a regression, they'll learn a lot about who we are as a soul and what we're doing here. And they can start gaining clues to past lives, and that sort of thing. So that would be my closing thought at this point.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much, Linda. I really enjoyed having you, and I enjoyed everyone's questions in the chat room. I couldn't even keep up with my own. But it was wonderful, and we look forward to having you back again. You know, and I encourage everyone to go to www.ravencenter.com to check out Linda and her husband Earl's training there for hypnotherapy, regression, past life therapy, and learn how to do that. And also to get the book, you can get it directly at bringingyoursoultolight.com. All right. Thank you so much, Linda. I look forward to it. Give my love to Earl, and we'll talk soon.
That sounds great. You take care. It's been great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Remember, everyone, find the joy in enjoying the journey.